PhD at Munich, and before that he did a master's at Stanford, and today he's going to tell us about probing many-body localization with ultra-cold quantum matter.
Thank you so much, and also thank you so much for the invite. So today I'm going to tell you how we use ultra-cold quantum gases in optical lattices to probe many-body localization, which is essentially the interacting generalization of Anderson localization, and what more we can learn in these systems that you cannot traditionally probe using numerics or certain techniques. The experiments were performed in Munich with Henrik, who was basically with me in the lab all the time, in the group of Emanuel Bloch at LMU Munich. And there was also quite active collaboration with Ehud Altman, who is now in Berkeley. He was in Israel originally. And Michel Knapp, with both of which are main authors in most of the papers I'm going to talk about. Okay, so let me start with the general idea that when you have a classical world, so that means if I take two liquids which are at high temperatures and I mix them, they typically tend to mix very quickly. So local relaxation happens very fast, and what is left at long times is some kind of hydrodynamics. So certain very few number of globally conserved quantities such as extensive energy or temperature, these things kind of govern the long time evolution of the system, and that's all that's left. So locally, the things equilibrate very quickly. And the reason for this is quantum entanglement. So local degrees of freedom very quickly get entangled with more and more degrees of freedom. And if you look locally in the system, you always find that the system looks thermal. And this is kind of the reason why when you mix two liquids like these, you always get a mixed liquid very, very quickly. Something very similar actually also happens in the quantum world. So here's an experiment done with cold atoms by Stefan Trotsky and also in my group. What they did was the following. They took an optical lattice, which is in this direction, and they put atoms only on alternate sides, okay? And they looked at how does this state evolve in a generic one-dimensional Hamiltonian. So it has interactions in it, it has hopping in it. So what does this state do when you let it evolve in time? And so it's kind of like a classical interpretation of this, where you have two liquids here. Here you have two kinds of states, one empty and one filled, and you want to see how does this evolve in time. And what happens is something like this. So as time evolves, within just a few tunneling times, the particles hop to nearby sites and they completely forget where they came from into this mixture which has equal probability density on all even and odd sides. So this is so locally it equilibrates very quickly. There are some long time hydrodynamic tails, those are left, but that's it. It's very much like a classical liquid. And so in this sense, when you are at high temperatures, when things mix very quickly, you always end up getting a classical fate for your system. So there's a loss of memory from your initial conditions. And so if you try to create some kind of quantum cats, like on and off, something like this, very quickly it's gonna go away from your system.
So when you said generic Hamiltonian, you meant generic local Hamiltonian, right?
So this will also happen in generic Hamiltonian. So even if you have long-range interactions, it's hard to imagine something would change.
Well, the interesting thing is that it's local and it happens, right?
Okay, I mean, for me that's kind of, okay. I mean, in some sense, your system is fully connected because you have some hopping. So particles can actually hop to long distances. It's just that the density wave order quickly goes away and equilibrates. There are some long-time hydrodynamic tails that are still left, and that's it. Okay, so the question that I want to ask in this talk is, can a large quantum system evade this classical fate, exactly this classical fate, where it loses all the memory that it came from? Of the state that it came in. Okay. So I'm going to talk about three things. One is thermalization, which is when this kind of losing of memory happens, and the alternative to this, which is many-body localization. How we probe that in the experiments in two dimensions. And the last is about Floquet MBL system, which is a very peculiar property of MBL system that even when they're driven, they tend to, at certain conditions, remember where they came from. So this is really an only exception that we know of right now, which is generic. So let me begin with something very simple. So we know of quantum systems where quantum information is indeed preserved, and they're typically near the ground states of your system. So you can have quantum Hall effects, topological insulators, Fermi liquids, quantum critical points, and in this case, really, you need quantum behavior to explain the system. But in this talk, I don't want to talk about states which are close to the ground states, but rather really far away from it. And what generically happens is something like this, and this is the idea of ETH, which is eigenstate thermalization hypothesis, which says that even in isolated quantum systems, the system serves as its own bath. That means this will mix with this, this will mix with this, and nearby environment would be enough for the system to get fully entangled, and locally it will lose its memory. And this is the idea of local thermalization, which typically holds in excited states. So in this plot, I show energy density as a function of how many states you have. Typical ground state behavior is with these zero energy density states. This is not what I want to talk about in this talk. I really want to talk about these highly excited states, so the bulk of the excited spectrum. And in this case, you typically have local thermalization. And so in this particular case, you have ergodicity, which causes demise of your quantum correlations, which typically means that these kind of quantum cats very quickly evolve from being dead and alive to being either dead or alive. So it kind of very small perturbations of your system project you into these states. And so we want to look for non-ergodic systems, because this is typically what happens in ergodic systems, where this fate is avoided. So where you don't really go from here to here with small perturbations. Okay. So we know of examples where this happens even in high energy density states, and these are integrable systems. So here's an example of integrable system. It's a Newton's cradle, and what happens here is the following. So you have a one-dimensional chain of balls in this case. It's a classical system, and what you have is that the momentum is somehow transferred exactly because the mass of the particle is exactly tuned to be the same, and then if you want to conserve energy and momentum in these collisions, the only way that happens is the momentum never relaxes. So you start with some momentum peak, and it never relaxes to the Boltzmann distribution. And this is a classical example of ergodicity breakdown and also non-thermalization. There is actually a very nice experiment by the group of David Weiss in Penn State in the US, which realized the quantum version of this. They call it the quantum Newton's cradle, where they took a lot of bosons in one dimensions and they made them collide at very high interactions, and they see that even after thousands of collision times, they did not fully relax. So there was a full revival of the initial momentum distribution. This is after thousands of collisions between atoms. So this is really not a typical process of thermalization. But there's a problem with this. These integrable systems are extremely fine-tuned. So there are some emergent conservation laws, but they break down very, very quickly if you add small perturbations to your system. So they're very fine-tuned, and I personally only know one-dimensional interacting integrable systems. So if I try to write down an integrable system in two dimensions, and I try to add interactions to it, it almost always breaks up. So I'd be very happy to know if you can tell me a 2D interacting integrable systems without any weird limits in which some numbers go to infinity or something like that. So they're very fine-tuned and they're one-dimensional. So what we want to look at is robust thermalization breakdown, and we want to look for this in higher dimension. This is like the precise aim of my talk. Okay, there's also in this context something that I should mention, which is the Tong-Skerridew gas, which is quite similar to this. It's just slightly higher interactions, which was also done in my group by Bell and Paradis and these people. It's also a very nice paper. Okay, so the idea that connects to many-body localization actually is already mentioned in Anderson's original paper. And the idea of Anderson localization is that you have a single particle in a disordered potential in one dimension. And what happens is that the particles get localized. So even for smallest amount of disorders, you get always localization in one dimension. And this is basically because of vanishing probability of resonances between two sites if you choose them randomly enough in your system. And this causes an absence of transport and failure of ETH and all these things. And if you don't know what Anderson localization is, the idea is very simple. So this is a simple plot which illustrates how localization works. So I start with a particle which is in the center of a lattice, which is indexed here. And I look at the time. So I want to look at how does this density of a single particle evolve in a time. And this is the case with no disorder. And what happens is the particle spreads in this light cone fashion. So it spreads out in this light cone, and it completely spreads over your entire lattice at long enough times. What happens in a localized system is completely different. So you start with, again, a particle at the center here. And this is the probability density, which is close to 1. And then in time, it never actually spreads out into the full lattice. So it remains localized at the origin of where it came from. And this is basically the idea of Anderson localization. And the normal question to ask is, does Anderson localization survive interactions? Okay, if it does, then it's really a robust breakdown of ergodicity. So the normal consensus was for a long time that it actually does not. And what the mechanism which would make it not is the following. So you have interaction, and there are two particles, and once they start talking to each other, they can make a correlated hop. And at higher enough orders, all of the particles would delocalize at long enough times. And the MBL was exactly the stability of this kind of Anderson localization to interactions, and people said this is not always true. So if your temperature is low enough, You can indeed have a phase where it does not fully delocalize. And systems with bounded spectrum, so you don't actually allow arbitrarily high kinetic energy, but bounded kinetic energy, then you can indeed even have a localization phenomena where all eigenstates are localized. So you don't even have to worry about, you can tune in whatever interaction strength you want, you can pick up whatever energy density you want, you can always have localization. And this was originally the work of Baskwell and Altshuler and also Polyakov and two other people. This is not the Polyakov in Princeton. This is another Polyakov. For bounded spectrum, the work was done by David Hughes and many of his students. There are two excellent reviews on this that I highly, highly recommend. One is by Rahul Nandkishore and David Hughes, and one is by Ronen and Ehud, both in the same publication of reviews of condensed matter physics. So highly recommended if you want to know more about the basics of this topic. Okay. So then we've talked about two kind of high energy paradigms in isolated systems. So as from what we know, these are the only two paradigms that can really exist in high temperatures. One is thermalization in the sense of ETH. So even your system is isolated, there is no external bath, it still thermalizes itself locally. So it has a highly, highly non-local memory. So if you try to look at just simple observables, local observables, you will never find that the system is not thermal. And all that it has is classical hydrodynamics at long times. And the other type paradigm is of many-body localization, which is essentially the breakdown of ergodicity in these interacting systems, for which I unfortunately don't have a classical picture because it's really a quantum phenomena. So you cannot have, it's really localization in some kind of weird Fock space. Where the system has some kind of a local memory, so if you do some perturbation in the system, it'll stay there for long times. And the system, you require quantum dynamics to describe it, and it's a robust breakdown of ergodicity in your system. And this happens normally when you add disorder in your system. Now, disorder is in quotes because you don't really need disorder. You can also do with quasi-periodic potentials. So I think more correct term would be to say you need detunings. You need some kind of aperiodic detunings. So you'll not always get it, of course, but for most aperiodic detunings that you can think of, so you take enough number of sites and make them random enough, it will give you localization. So you don't really need disorders. You don't need, what I mean is you don't really need randomness. You can also get it with aperiodic potentials. In 1D, there are actually a lot of experiments by now and also a lot of theoretical which have basically established this paradigm between an ergodic phase and an MBL phase. We also did some experiment which is published in 2015. There's another experiment by Chris Monroe's group with ions. And so it seems like a generic phenomenon. It happens in many different systems as long as you have an isolated system. What in this talk I want to talk about is not 1D but higher dimensions where also this robust ergodicity breakdown happens. So let's say at least happens to highly non-trivial times because you don't really have ever infinite times in a system. Okay, so that makes me take you to a bit of an experimental perspective. So how do you really observe this phase? And how do you probe it? So number one requirement that you have is no underlying bath. So if you take a condensed matter system and you take it to high temperatures, typically there is an underlying phonon bath that will destroy MBL, so you will not be able to observe its signatures. So then you would like to go to low temperatures so that the phonon bath is decoupled, but at low temperatures you don't have MBL anymore. So this kind of the contest between two things. And the second thing is you need a probe to measure non-thermal behavior. So you cannot just measure something like the temperature of your gas or something because there is no temperature in your system. So you need to see these two things, and in this talk I will show you how ultracool atoms in optical lattices can be used to do both of these things as well as add a controlled amount of disorder in your system, or let's say detuning in your system. Okay, so this is a paper we put out some time ago, and this was the work done with Professor Michael Knapp in Munich and Sarang Gopalkrishnan in CUNY, who made us understand a lot of details of our experiment. They also developed a theory model to explain the observables we had, which was in very, very strong disagreement with what we saw, but that's the best they could do. So these results that I'm going to show you are really results that you get out of a quantum simulator that you cannot just do a numerical calculation on. But of course, it's an invitation if somebody would like to try these systems. I would like to also know what you can simulate. Okay, so localization in the non-interacting problem, the Anderson problem, has been measured also in cool atoms by these two beautiful experiments. So this one is done in the group of Massimo Inguzio in Italy and the other by Alain Aspey in Paris, where they looked at non-interacting atoms in a disordered potential. So they loaded it somewhere and let it expand in time. So they dropped the atoms and they see in a disordered potential and see what happens. And what they see is that long times it develops this kind of an exponential envelope, which is like the hallmark of Anderson localization. And this stayed there. So even for long times, this exponential did not go once the density settled there. So we want to do exactly the version of this for many body systems, just taken to a single site and single particle level. So here there was a bulk of atoms that were taken. So we're going to put atoms in alternate sites, and we're going to let them expand, and we want to see how fast they expand, and what they, are they able to help each other in expanding beyond a point. So we use this local probe where the local relaxation, because kind of the fastest probe. I should also mention two experiments that were done earlier, which looked at a global probe. So they put all the atoms on one side of the system, and they looked at how to relax. But this is kind of a very, very slow probe. So it's not very clear how you can distinguish slow dynamics from absolute dynamics here. Yeah.
Yeah. Are you tuning the interaction between the ions or whatever?
Yeah, yeah. We will do that. So in this case, there were no interactions effectively. When we do it, we will actually do the repeat this experiment to show that the experiment works very, very well without interactions. So we have a perfect benchmark because you can do calculations in the non-interacting problem. And then we will switch on interactions and see what the new dynamics are for which you cannot do any calculations. So we'll benchmark the non-interacting problem and then we'll introduce interaction in the system. And you will see that interactions give rise to some kind of local delocalization mechanisms. Okay. So let me begin by showing what our model is. So the model is something like this. I mean, it's a lot of terms, but don't worry about all the details. What you have to note is the first term, which is the kinetic energy of your system, some J. We can just set it to 1 for everything we care about. It's just an overall energy scale. There's a strength of the detuning, which is delta, and this is an important parameter. And the last one is interactions, which is U. With interactions, kind of two limits are important. One is having zero interactions, one is having some finite amount of interaction. Nothing drastic happens if you tune interactions by a tiny bit. So we're going to look at two cases, one for low and high disorder and low and high interactions. Okay, so this is the...
The interactions are exactly on site?
The interactions are exactly on site, yes.
How do you tune their strength?
So there's something called as Feshbach resonance. I will talk about it. So I will describe each of the term now how we really construct it in our system.
Can you turn it exactly to zero? Or to say like a non-interacting case, you only have to load one. You have to load exactly one.
So we can tune it to really, really zero. So really zero. There is some extra tricks we play, not just U. So this interaction is between two different spin species of our atoms. And we can load only one. And then there is no interaction. So you don't even have to worry about the U term. So there's some tricks we play, and we also set U to zero and stuff like this. So when I say zero, it's really, you can take it as zero. So we also do simulations in our system to very, very long times, so hundreds of tunneling times, and we see really it matches perfectly well with that. So you can really be assured that this is smaller than 1 in 10 to the 3 or something like that. So it's very tiny. So, I mean, basically we have almost complete control over J, delta, and U. There is, it's completely tunable. Okay, so this is our system that we have in the experiment. We have a 2D lattice with basically an hopping along x direction and y direction, which is set to the same value. So you have the same hopping in x and y. It's a fully 2D model. We put atoms into it, which are of two different spins. So they're the blue atoms and the red atoms. And if they happen to be on the same site, then they will have an interaction U. Okay, then we put on this kind of quasi-periodic detuning, both along the x and the y directions. Okay. Which serves as our disorder or whatever the localization potential with some strength of 2 delta. And then you have this term of interaction, which is U. If you put two atoms on the same side, then you have to pay energy cost U. So it's a fully interacting model, and we can try to see how the system relaxes in such a system. And there's an important thing here that we only put the atoms on the even sides. So there are no atoms on the odd sides, okay? So we're going to see how this state scrambles itself from even to odd sides. So in a thermal system, what you'd expect is that it's completely scrambled. It should not distinguish microscopically between even and odd sides. So this order parameter must vanish. Whereas in a non-thermal localized system, this order parameter will not vanish. So how do we make such a lattice system? We take a laser and we literally shoot it on a mirror, and it reflects back and forms a standing wave, and that's your lattice. We take another laser and we shoot it also here, and with some slightly different periodicity, which is an irrational multiple, and this together gives you a potential which looks, well, it looks by random, but it's actually quasi-periodic, okay? So it's quasi-periodic potentials, not real random, but they still support exponential localization beyond a critical disorder strength. So it can still give you localization. And this was done Aubry and André in 1980 paper. In the experiment, we used two lasers along this direction and two lasers along this direction, and they have incommensurate ratios between the two, and so you get these quasi-periodic potentials. Okay, so we have made this the optical lattice behind that we need. We still need to probe the system, and it's a three-part process. So number one is creating the density wave, so creating this pattern with atoms only on the even sides. Number two is time evolution. You let the system evolve and see what the dynamics produce. And number three is that you read out what did it do. Okay. So the experiment, what we do is we create this initial state with atoms only on the each side. So these are the rows that I showed in this pattern. And it evolves into a state like this with even number of atoms. It's the same number of atoms between even and odd sides. This will characterize a fully mixed thermal state. This is what you expect a thermal state to do. Okay. But if you had a localized system, what will happen is that a lot of atoms will remain on their original positions, but very little will get transferred on the other sides. Okay, so you remain this kind of a density order in your system, and this can be captured by our macroscopic order parameter, which we call imbalance, which is the normalized atom number between even and odd sides. And this is really the main observable that we have. It's this very fast probe, so if you don't have disorder, it really captures relaxation in one tunneling time, so it's very, very good for a separation of time scale in your system. In a thermal system, you expect it to go to zero, and in an MBL system, you expect it to remain greater than zero. And this can directly probe the non-thermal behavior of your system. Okay.
Is there, you know, do you have a gradation of how MBL a system is based on how far away, like based on how close this is to the theoretical maximum, which is?
One. So the bigger it is, the more localized your system is. So what I will expect, and this is the nice thing about going to a serious place, that you have nice blackboards. If you could really measure imbalance at infinite times, so really at infinite time, evolution time, what you will expect as a function of disorder strength is that it increases, at some point becomes non-zero. And that's where your MBL transition is. Right? So in a thermal phase for low disorders, you have an order parameter which is zero. And at some point it undergoes a transition, it becomes non-analytic and goes into a non-zero value. Now there could be multiple non-analytic points. Right. I'm not discounting that, but there is at least one phase transition into a localized phase.
Is there a point where it saturates, or does it just forever go?
It should be monotonic, so I should always increase with delta. I have never found an exception. So it's not linear, so.
Yeah, sure.
But it should increase. So roughly, actually, you can, okay, let's not go there, but it should always increase with disorder, yes. Of course, it saturates to one, right? So theorists typically light some diverging things at some critical points, and it's rather easy to see that if you plot something like this, in the non-interacting case, you can directly show that it goes something like 1 over the localization length square. So in the interacting case, it's an open problem, and then you can directly show that there's something that diverges also in the MBL phase. And then continuously contract as you increase your disorder length. Okay. So, good. So this is really the crucial observable, this imbalance between even and odd sides, and this is the thing that we are going to look. This is our main observable in the system. Okay. So first, let's start with what you said. So we have no interactions in the system. We switch off this turn completely, and we look at just disorder and J. And here we know the solution. We expect that the system get localized for delta or J equals 2. So before that it's delocalized, beyond that it's localized, right? And this is what we really see. So for example, one value that we pick is like delta or J 5. And this is the evolution of imbalance as a function of time. And what you see is that something close to 1 it starts with, because all the atoms are on the even sides. It's finite. It's like 0.92 or something because of finite experimental prediction. But then quickly relaxes. But then it goes to a finite offset, which is non-zero. Okay. So it relaxes, but then at some point goes to a non-zero value, which directly tells you that you have localization. Okay. And then what you can do is you can go some long time, something like 50 or 100 tunneling times in this case, and you can look at the imbalance continuously as a function of disorder strength, and what you see is that your imbalance continuously increases with your disorder strength. And you can do a simulation for this, the red and the gray line. I'll tell you the difference between the two, and you see that continuously increases, and at some point around 2, it shows a transition. So now it's exactly not like this, because it's not infinite times. So you have a finite time crossover. Right? So you can do the simulations actually to longer times in the experiment. There are some limiting case, and you really see that it really goes more or less close to 2. So you can do a finite time scaling, and then you can find out exactly the critical point. Also, this is Aubrey-Andrade, so the scaling is not fully clear on the delocalized side, but you can roughly see that it goes closer and closer and closer to 2. So that's a non-interacting system, okay? And in the experiment, there's some rounding off because also of some harmonic confinement that introduces an effective length cutoff and stuff like this, but this is not important. Okay. So we understand the system quite well. The theory and experiment match quite well. So the disorder and J are well calibrated. And all we have to do now is put 2 spins and switch out the interactions. And look at exactly this relaxation curve for the interacting case. And that's our MBL case. OK. So now we switch on interactions. And this is what we see. So this green curve is, again, the same curve without interactions. And then the blue curve is with interactions. So you see that in both the curves, it starts close to one because all the atoms are put on the even sides. But in the non-interacting case, it just flattens out, showing you localization. But in the interacting case, it slowly relaxes. So actually, rather small values. So you can go to longer times, slightly lower disorders, and goes to like 10 to the minus 2 or something of our background value. So this particular case is exactly the same delta or J of 5, right? So it's rather strong disorders for single particle case. But we see that the interactions do something. So they drive some slow relaxation in your system, and you would like to know how long does it go. If I continue to increase my disorder, does it always happen? Okay? Or do I ever enter a many-body localized phase? Okay. So this is the probe where I look at disorder-dependent relaxation of delta 1, 4, and 10. So I have three parameters. One is very, very small. In this case, you see imbalance very, very quickly relaxes to a zero value. So the system is consistent with being a thermal system. It forgets whatever memory you imprinted on it, and it becomes a delocalized system. At 10, it's almost flat. In fact, if you measure the lifetime of this thing going to zero, it's diverging. It's extremely long. It's completely consistent with our background lifetime that we know of. So there, it's, of course, only true for a perfectly isolated system. So there's some small coupling to the environment. We know that explicitly, and it's absolutely consistent with that. At 4, something interesting happens. It's relaxing, but it's relaxing at some very weird rate. So it's not completely zero. It's not non-zero, but it seems to relax at some rate. And we would like to probe this regime more properly. And we want to know what kind of slow relaxation is happening in your system.
Sorry, what's the value of UE?
In this case, 5. So the same as the previous plots.
Okay.
Yeah. So we want to have U disorder and hop single particle bandwidth all comparable, okay? So no extremes. So all are order one. So let me write down the three parameters. So one is the single particle bandwidth. In 2D something like 8J, because there are two directions, so 4J and 4J. The second is interactions, which we always keep close to 5J. And the third is the strength of the disorder. And this is what we are going to tune to see where we get localization. Okay?
So the small disorder, is that basically exponential? Do you measure, can you fit an exponential to that?
This relaxation?
Yeah.
Well, then two cunning times goes to zero. So you can fit amplitude to zero, you can fit exponential to zero. Right? I mean, you cannot distinguish between.
Okay, but theoretically that's supposed to be zero.
It's supposed to be a Bessel function. For zero disorder, it's supposed to be a Bessel function multiplied by an exponential, but I mean, it's kind of irrelevant how exactly it decays to zero.
I mean, isn't it super relevant because you're comparing the speed of relaxation between the green and red curve? So isn't
it? Oh, no, I will come to it. I'll compare it much more properly, so not in this fashion. This case is like, it's immeasurable, let's say. It's two tunneling times, whereas this one would be rather long, so a few tens of tunneling times. So let's look at this plot exactly. So this is the same imbalance on a log-log plot, so longer times than the previous plot, so up to 100 tunneling times, and you scan the disorder from 3, 5, 7, and 11. And you continuously see that your imbalance value increases, and as well as the rate of relaxation decreases. So there are two things. As you increase your disorder, your absolute values of imbalance increase, and the rate of relaxation decreases as you increase the disorder value. So it appears by I to be slightly faster than a power law. So a power law on a log-log plot would be a straight line. But it only appears very tiny bit faster. It's not really much faster than a power law. There was a theoretical prediction by Gopal Krishnan, David Hughes, Michel Knapp. We say that it should be a logarithmic correction. Our data seems quite consistent to that. So it would be a good prediction to. But this theory, by the way, never has MBL phase built in it. So we'll use this theory later to show what exponent it predicts in your system. And we will also show the experimentally obtained exponent. We'll see this is very, very different. So we'll show this theory actually breaks down close to an MBL transition point. The theory requires certain assumption. It's not very clear if they're well justified. I'll not go into it. So this kind of, you can just take it as go that it relaxes this way. You can also fit some other point, and what I want to look at is how does this relaxation exponent vary as a function of disorder strength? Okay? And this is the answer. This is the relaxation exponent as a function of disorder. And what you see is that for low disorders, so 3 and 2, it's very, very large. At some point, you can't actually fit anything to it, so you get these large error bars because it just relaxes so quickly. But then it continuously decreases. At some point, it just basically becomes 0 to the best we can resolve in our system. And in this particular case, it happens around delta or GF9, and this would suggest that you indeed enter an MBL phase beyond this point, or at least a phase or a regime or a crossover, which is very, very long relaxation timescale that you cannot probe it. So this, I have already subtracted the small coupling that I know from the environment that I talked about. If you don't do that, that plot is here to be, this is like the most raw data that you can think of, in which case the relaxation exponent continuously decreases and at some point goes into a background level. And this dashed line is what we know from our independent calculation, what the coupling is, and it agrees pretty well. So it agrees with one part in some 10 to the 3 or something like that. And the interesting thing here is that somewhere around delta over j of 9, so it's really not a ridiculous number, your relaxation really stops completely. So even though all the parameters are order 1, you get a relaxation which is order 10 to the 3 or something like that, which is limited by our background coupling. So there's something non-trivial happening around this point. Whether it's a true transition or a true crossover, this is currently not known. And the green line is what you expect from their theory. So you can see that the slope kind of matches okay with the experiment, but there's a really large systematic difference between the two. And the idea is that the theory is never supposed to work close to the transition point, so here it's within a factor 2 or something, but here it just absolutely doesn't work, because as you go closer to the transition point, everything becomes slow at relaxation. Most of the assumption of the theory do not work anymore. So this is an open problem right now. How do you describe the region around this point? Okay, good. How much time? Okay, fine. So you can then actually go ahead in the experiment. I told you can tune interactions completely, and you can plot the imbalance at around this many tunneling times, or somewhere around 50 or 100 tunneling times. And you can systematically look how interactions delocalize your system. And you see that as you go from non-interacting to interacting, your system really delocalizes, resulting in decrease of imbalance or an equicontour line that points towards higher disorders. Okay. So you can measure this completely in the experiment. You can also do the energy density dependent measurements, which means that if you take this initial state that we had and you put many doublons in there, so not just one particles that I showed you, but sometimes you can even put 2 or 3, then what happens is that if you put more particles, you get actually even more localization. Now this is very weird, because you're increasing the energy density in your system, you're increasing the temperature of your system, but you get more localization. And the reason for that is if you put 2 particles in strong interactions, what happens is they become a new bound quasi-particle. And this quasi-particle has a lower hopping strength and effectively higher disorder. And so it doesn't hop, so it sees a higher disorder, and therefore it localizes even more. Of course, this only works at strong interactions, and a low interaction, indeed, you measure that it doesn't actually matter what your fraction is. So these are the two kind of regimes, like at low interactions, high interactions, some kind of crossover between them. And these two curves are done for almost no interactions, they're about 30, almost no doublons and 30% doublons in the system. Okay, good. So let me summarize with this the first part of the talk, where we made this new system which has like 2-dimensional quasi-periodic potentials, and we find something which is MBL-like glassy regime. The non-interacting system is exactly localized, we can solve it, it's Anderson localized. Interactions give you some relaxation which is measurable, and at high enough disorders, the relaxation also becomes indistinguishable from background. So it's of course an open question, what really happens at infinite times? I'm also not sure if experiments can really answer these questions, but okay. Which brings me to the second part of the talk, which is about Floquet MBL systems. And this essentially rides on having a periodically driven MBL system having a very specific property that it does not absorb energy from the drive if the frequency is high enough. Okay, and this was published this year, and this was done in collaboration with Michel Knapp in TU Munich. And this is kind of the picture that we have, that you shake some liquid, so you have some container, then you look at it and you can still see something that was remaining from the original 2 liquids that you put in. So there's some memory left of your original liquid, so that's kind of the idea of this diagram. Okay, so let me begin. Why do we want to do periodic driving in your system? So there is a classical system called Kapitsa's pendulum, after named after Peter Kapitsa, who did it. He didn't get the Nobel Prize for this work, but he also did this. And the idea is that you take a classical system, a pendulum, and you drive it up and down, and what happens is that not just the inverted position where the ball is at the bottom of the cloud becomes stable, but there's a new stable position, like exactly stable position that comes on the top of your system. And here's a cool video that really shows it. Let's see if I can play it. It looks like not. Okay.
We did see something different.
Does it work? No, I think this one,
Yeah, it's back now.
Oh, it's working. Okay, cool. Good. So this is just the non-driven system where everything is at the bottom, so you try to take it somewhere, and it just always comes back to the bottom, okay? And now it's gonna start driving the system up and down, so it's really just an up and down motor. It's not some feedback stabilized system, it's just moving the pivot up and down, okay? So now it's moving up and down, and now let's see what happens. So the system generates in a flow case resting a new stable position, which you cannot have in equilibrium. It's really a non-equilibrium phenomena. And this is a classical example of doing this. And you switch it off in some time. And it's really stable. You can move it. It doesn't matter. It's not some fine-tuned setting. Okay, I think it'll switch it off at some point. Okay, yeah, there you go. Okay, good. So what I want to say is that it's really not feedback stabilized. It's not some active robotics. It's just moving it up and down. You have a flow case system, and you end up getting this kind of new stable states, which are not present in the undriven system. And you want to do something similar in quantum settings. You want to use this extra term that you have to create new states. And there's a very nice example shown by Oka and Oki in 2009, which is that if you take a graphene, so a normal graphene system, and you apply circularly polarized light on it, so you drive the system in a flow case setting, and you apply a weak DC field, and what you get is a Hall response. Okay? And the idea is that normally if you just shake your system like this in the frame of the system, it generates a coupling between X and Y direction effectively. So you apply a DC field and the electron field and effective magnetic field to move there. Ideas like these were used also to realize the topological Haldane model by the group of Tillmann and Slinger in Zurich, where they used this kind of lattice shaking to get this nearest neighbor hopping and the effective phase on it. And also to realize this Haper-Hofstetter model in Munich, in my group, where they used laser polarizations to develop a flow case system which was driven, and the phase imprinting came from the difference between two phases. So you can go to an effective model and you can print these phases and you can get these very interesting models in your system. So there is a good interest in developing this flow case system to get regimes you cannot get in undriven systems. But these are all single particle systems, so both of them don't require any many body system. And the natural question is asked, can you also extend it to many body systems, okay? So this is the promise of quantum many body system, that you'll be able to generate things that you cannot have in the equilibrium setting. But the peril of such system is that they always heat up, so you don't get anything actually. If you drive them, they always heat up, you get nothing in that. Okay, and the idea is that when you have many body system, the energy level spacings are arbitrarily small, everything is coupled, so you can drive it whatever frequency you'd want, there's some energy which is resonant, it will continue to absorb in your system, and you'll always heat up to infinite temperatures. So there is this idea that you start with positive temperatures, you start with negative temperatures, it doesn't matter, you always heat up to an infinite temperature state. So it's really irrelevant where you start with, and this always happens, and so this was shown actually rather recently, and I'm not sure if, yeah.
I suppose here the relevant question is the time scale of things.
Yes, so I will come to that. I will come to that, yes. So we are really talking about exact phases, infinite times right now. Okay. So in this system, you will indeed always heat up, except when there are special situations like integrable system, which effectively break down into single particle system. But so if you have a robust system, can you avoid that? And so if you take the static eigenstate thermalization hypothesis, it effectively becomes a Floquet eigenstate thermalization hypothesis, where not even some energy dependent, not even some extensive energy variables remain, you just get a flat line, you just get a flat density matrix, nothing. So if you look locally, you will see nothing. Okay, but you can again use non-ergodic MBL systems, and this was done, so you may not always heat to infinite temperatures if your frequency is high enough. And the idea there is that the modes are localized, so at high frequency you have local gaps, and at far large distances you have overlaps between eigenstates. So if you look at the Fermi's golden rule, so it's not fully understood, it's just a very rough argument, then there are two things. One is the matrix integral between two states, and the other thing is their energy has to be conserved, right? So if your frequency is high enough, then the nearby excitations will never absorb energies because they're detuned from each other. But if you have to go far enough to make the energies match, then this overlap goes to zero because they're exponentially localized. This doesn't happen in extended systems, so it doesn't absorb. So this is a very rough idea. It's not an you still need quantum features and destructive interference to have an exact localization and stuff like this. So in a classical system, this would never work. And this is the idea behind MBL, that at high frequency you can get localization, and at low frequency you get delocalization. Because at low frequency this can still absorb because you can have resonances between different sites. So this kind of presents like a Floquet phase diagram in your system, where you have disorder in your system in this direction and frequency in this system. The inverse frequency, what you have is infinite frequency, you're the same as the non-driven system. So you get transition from an ergodic phase to a many-body localized phase. But at finite frequency, if your disorder is high enough, you get into this regime which is many-body localized. Okay, so this will really only work if you don't have an ergodic system. So in non-ergodic MBL systems, you can go indeed a transition from a localized to an ergodic system as a function of the frequency of the drive. Okay? And the question we ask is, can we really show this in the experiment? Does it really work, these perturbative arguments, these kind of things? Classically, this would never work. If you think about it, if you're doing disorder high-low, it wouldn't even care about your frequency if there is no coherence in your system. So if you can really show that this works, it shows the quantum coherence in your system. Okay, so here's the experiment. What we do is we take each of the on-site energies of our system and we drive it sinusoidally with some amplitude A and some frequency nu. So this is the system. We have opposite signs. We put atoms on opposite sides and we drive the system up and down. Okay, so there is some contraction and breathing mode in the entire system. So it's a global drive. And the global drive has some frequency which is given by nu. Okay, and we're going to measure the odd even density imbalance as a function of time for low frequencies and high frequencies for the case where amplitude is actually large. So in this case, we just set amplitude to 1, so the strongest drive that you can make, and just look at imbalance as a function of time, and this is what you see. So this is normalized imbalance, forget what the normalization is, as a function of time, and what you see is that for low frequencies, indeed the imbalance relaxes very quickly to very, very small values. Whereas for high frequencies, the imbalance remains non-zero to very, very long times. And in these two cases, if you look at some finite time, the amount of time your system spends in the low disorder regime is actually the same. It's frequency independent. So it's not that you just spend more time at low disorders when you're at low frequency. You spend the same amount of time at low disorders in both cases, but still your system responds very, very differently in the two cases. So in this case, it shows strong localization. In this case, it shows strong delocalization. We can go ahead, we can look at some long time and look how does the system systematically behave as a function of frequency and disorder, and this is the phase diagram that's measured in the experiment as a result and the theory here. So let me just explain what we have here. We have disorder here on the x-axis and we have inverse frequency on the y-axis, exactly the plot I showed you earlier. This is with experiment and this is done with some DMRG calculations. So this is 1D, so it's not a problem. And what you see is that indeed, even though the system spends the same amount of time in the delocalized phase for all of these systems, you see a very high imbalance if the disorder is large and the frequency is high. So you get this kind of a localized phase over here. And as you increase your as you decrease your frequency, you undergo a delocalization transition with almost no imbalance in this high frequency region. You can also do some theoretical calculation of the level statistics, which I know that many theoreticians love to calculate. And you indeed see that it follows the it follows the Poisson statistics in the MBL case and follows an ergodic statistics in the ergodic state. It's not exactly COE, I think it's COE in the driven case. There are some slight distinctions between the two. So, but it, okay, essentially it goes to zero at zero, and then it shows this kind of curve. In the other case, it goes to a large, so there's no level repulsion in this case.
Sorry, stupid question. For someone who doesn't duplicate that. If it's a time-driven system, what's the spectrum here?
So of the Floquet Hamiltonian. Oh, so you write e to the minus ih Floquet, and then you diagonalize. That's why the system size you can get to do this is actually rather small.
Okay, so I didn't know that Floquet Hamiltonian is supposed to also diagonalize.
Also works, yes. And you can really show this kind of transition also there. So we also draw this parameter R, which you can calculate for this as a function of delta and nu, and really reproduces this curve. So it really works in the experiment. So this kind of the phase diagram, I mean, ideally you think of phases as infinite time and these kind of things, so you can take it as quasi-phase diagram or something like that, some long time dynamics phase diagram. Yeah?
So just to connect with the earlier work, is the nu equals zero limit just supposed to reproduce the phase transition at 9j?
That was 2D, this is 1D, sorry. So I should have emphasized this a bit more. So this is 1D, in this case you expect a transition somewhere around here. So we can also predict where we expect the transition in the driven case by drawing an equicontour line of the imbalance from here.
But isn't the non-driven case at y-axis equals infinity?
Exactly. So, but there is one thing that even when your frequency is infinity, it's the same as non-driven system. So if there is no time scale that can see this frequency, it will always average out. So the nu equals infinity is formally exactly the same as nu equals zero.
But so is there a symmetry? Like, is there a reflection symmetry between like nu very small and nu very large?
Good question. Well, I see that doesn't exist. So.
Well, yeah.
So, I mean, when I draw this, I assume that this is infinite enough that nothing changes. So, and it matches the calculation. So, up to that accuracy. So, I don't see any symmetry. Maybe you can warp it around and write in some way that it does show you that. Maybe, I don't know. But there's something more interesting that we found out that was not there in any of the theoretical papers. So this is just to complete that in this case you get an equal distribution, in this case you get an unequal distribution of your imbalances. But there's something that we found. So originally it was said that with your amplitude is to frequency is roughly order one, you get this delocalization transition line, which I showed over here. But then we found that if your amplitude is actually not exactly one, so you drive with smaller and smaller amplitudes in your system, even at low frequency, a large amplitude you indeed get zero imbalance, but then the imbalance increases and goes all the way to the non-driven system. So we found that you can have a driven system at low frequency, which also preserves imbalance for very long times, and most certainly does not obey this kind of a limit. So we tested it to something like A over nu of 10 to the minus 6, and even there it does not delocalize. So it seems to suggest a system that does not fully delocalize even at low frequencies if the amplitude is small, if you do this kind of a modulation. So when you do the breathing mode in your system, we don't fully understand it. I think at some point I also believe that it should delocalize, but I want to know at what is the critical frequency, what is this rough ratio where it does, and this has been out of question. So we did try to do some theory, but it's currently an open problem. We don't fully know how exactly and when exactly does it delocalize. And there was some paper from Shivaji Sondhi and Vedika Kemani saying that if you try to do some braiding operations which have some disorder-protected localization, then you can create long-distance resonances. And these can indeed be suppressed if you do the whole thing in phase. Because of this renormalization of A or nu parameter. But of course, it depends what exactly you're doing on your system. And the rough idea behind this is that you have this localized system, and if you do everything in phase, then the on-site energies never actually cross each other. Okay, so if both of them always go in sync and they're far away, they will never absorb the phonon, and if they're close away, they cannot absorb the phonon because the phonon is too low in frequency. And there's a finite gap between them. So it can happen that it orders an nth order phonon to indeed cause an hop, and then indeed it will not be visible in this kind of timescale that we probe. Okay, so with this I would like to summarize the Floquet type, which is that you can get into this kind of Floquet TH phase to an Floquet MBL phase, where you don't have a rho which is essentially constant, but this can really scatter between eigenstates to eigenstates. These are the two edges, but there are more things. One of them is what he asked about the time scale, so there can be indeed free thermal phases. They shouldn't be called really phases, but free thermal states, so where the relocalization time scales are anyway very long, or thermalization time scales are very, very long, so you can still look at some interesting physics in between. And this was indeed used in most of the Harper-Hofstadter and the Haldane model papers that I was talking about. They just looked at short times. And then you can also have driven integrable systems, few body systems, where also you have finite gaps, so you can find frequency where it doesn't absorb. And of course, you can make the system not absorb by just dissipating it by coupling it to some bath which keeps the temperature fixed. So these are all things that hopefully we'll look in the future. From the MBL, there are really many, many things that we are thinking of. What is the relation between true disorder and quasi-periodic systems? What happens at even longer times if we can probe them? Measuring optical conductivity, equilibrium phase transitions, what is the effect of disorder on them? Measuring something which is not this kind of delocalization mechanism, but some quantum phase dynamics. So this can be captured, for example, by entanglement entropy or some out-of-time ordered correlator, mobility edges, pre-thermal phases, driven dissipative systems. These are all things that we are looking for. So if you're interested, this is a very good time for you to tell me if you're thinking about something. I would be very excited to know about it. Okay, with that, I would like to thank again my group, which is mainly Henrik and Emmanuel who helped us, and Ehud, Michel, and Sarang, who were the main people who were involved in this work. Yeah. Thank you.
Questions? Okay, so first, when you talked about the Aubrey-André model, there, if I remember correctly, that there's the transition or crossover is from something that's essentially a free theory, it's undressing, to a localized theory.
Yes.
And then when you add, so now, first, when you add the interactions, then the, what's free just becomes ergodic?
Yes.
Yeah, okay. Mm-hmm. there's no second transition that happens.
It's hoped that it becomes ergodic. There is nothing obvious that you can see that remains integrable or anything like that.
Mm-hmm.
So I mean, if it's interacting, it can either be ergodic or integrable. I don't know of anything else, and if it's not MBL.
But it does that smoothly, I guess that's the question. So
I think if you have epsilon disorder, it will become ergodic.
Mm-hmm.
So you will kill. So it's also a bit pathological because this is a one-dimensional Fermi-Hubbard model. If you don't have any disorder, you will actually get an integrable system, which is because 1D Fermi-Hubbard model is integrable. And if you don't have any interactions, then you get single particle system, which is also not thermal. But if you put both of them, you hopefully get an ergodic system.
Right. I mean, there's certainly a transition between integrable but momentum space localized and integrable and at position space, your MBL kind of localized. So that transition can exist even if there's no ergodicity. That's what I'm...
No, but the momentum space localization is without disorder, but
yes.
MBL is with disorder. So with epsilon disorder, you will break the momentum space localization. So, I mean, the diagram is something like this. Let me just draw this. So if you have something like this, you have interactions here, and you have disorder here. In this case, there's no disorder, so you have Aubrey-Andre extended. Then you have Aubrey-Andre localized. In this plane, you always have 1D Fermi-Hubbard model. So which is, let's say, which is integrable. And then around here, you get this ergodic phase and an MBL phase.
Yeah.
Well, hopefully it's a phase.
Yeah. And I wanted to ask, what do you know about the type of transitions you get anyway? Like this MBL, how much can you probe experimentally?
So up to about
everything diverges there, presumably.
Yes, so we have done this. It's actually, we see this kind of slowing down in one dimension, but you have to remember the slowing down. So if you look at some relaxation timescales, so let's look at some relaxation timescale as a function of disorder strength, and let's assume there is some critical delta here. What you normally expect is the relaxation timescales diverge here. But what happens in the experiment gets cut off by some finite coupling to the experiment, right? So this is roughly what we see. I have like a slide here because I expected this to happen. So what happens is that normally when you have an isolated system, indeed everything would work fine. But if you don't have an isolated system and some coupling there to the environment, you will always kill it. In the experiment, something else actually happens, that when you have many MBL systems in one dimension, they couple to each other via a small perpendicular hopping, and this indeed destroys the MBL in the x direction because of S-wave interaction between x and y. And this actually is a more general thing. I think if you take a 1D non-thermal system like an integrable model or whatever you want, and you couple them identically, you will always get a thermal system in D plus one dimensions. So it doesn't even matter what your dimension is.
Well, you said you could measure the divergent correlation.
We cannot measure the diverging correlation length. We can measure the problem with MBL is what is the correlation length?
Didn't you write that's 1 over...
So the I said for the non-interacting case, you can roughly relate the infinite time imbalance as 1 over psi square, where psi square is a non-interacting localization length. But for the interacting case, I don't even know what the localization... I mean, there are some models which say it's some effective way the interactions decouple and stuff like this, but it's not very obvious what is that in the experiment. So if you want, you can just take inverse imbalance at some length scale that diverges, because indeed it will go to zero in this phase. So you can plot inverse imbalance and it will indeed show you this kind of behavior. But it's not clear what, I mean, it's 1 over psi or 1 over psi square. It's not clear to me. Maybe there is some exponent which connects the two, I don't know. Yeah.
So how big is your system in the experiment?
So in 2D, it's quite big. It's like 10,000 atoms with 220,000 sites. In 1D, it's square root of that, so 200 sites, 100 atoms. You know, average size. So it's a Gaussian cloud. At the edges, there are nothing. In the center, there are a lot of atoms.
There are no further questions. And let's thank Pranjali.